House Labor and Commerce will now come to order. It's 3:25 on March 3rd, and with us we have Representative Millett, Representative Chenault, Speaker Chenault, Representative Josephson, Representative Reinbold, myself, Chair Olson, two people who have been excused from the meeting. Let the record reflect we do have a quorum. Please turn off your cell phones. And we have one item on the calendar, presentation on developing a qualified workforce. And with us today we have Commissioner Diane Blumer. Welcome back, Commissioner.
Thank you.
And you didn't come by yourself.
Good afternoon, Chair Olson and members of the committee. My name is Diane Blumer, Commissioner for Department of Labor and Workforce Development. And what we'd like to do today is give a quick presentation on developing a qualified workforce, especially in light of some of the big projects that should be coming down the pike. So I thought what I would do is give you a quick overview on what we're looking at as far as the oil and gas component, and then turn it over to Juanetta Ayers, who's our business services director, and she will talk a little bit about what her shop's been doing on working on the oil and gas plan and developing the workforce overall. So the Alaska statute says that we have the responsibility to produce an oil and gas training plan. To be successful, we must engage oil and gas industry, and we realize that to have a workforce development plan that's going to be cohesive and it's going to be successful, we have to ensure that we bring industry along with us. So the first plan was developed in 2008. It was called the GEA, and it became the Oil and Gas Sector Workforce Development Plan that could morph into other industries. So while the original 113 occupations that were identified in that workforce development plan was a good start, we decided that we needed to be, in this updated plan, a little more focused, a little more precise, so that we really honed in on the high need of the occupational industries that we should and could focus on based on our resources. So other occupations, we want to make sure that we put on the record that they're not any less important. We're just giving some focus right now to oil and gas. Our goal was to produce a plan that is targeted and focused, and it can be implemented within the resources that we have available to us. The committee met, the industry steering committee met throughout the summer of 2013 and has continued to provide comment and guidance on the developing of the draft document. The department has also vetted the draft plan with key industry associations, labor unions, apprentice training trusts, and other organizations for additional comment. So we feel like we've really done a good job out there trying to market the plan and get input from all of the stakeholders. The plan has been presented to the Alaska Workforce Development Investment Board and will be re-presented when it's in its final form. The draft document was distributed to our wider circle of industry participants on February 21st of this year for an informal 30-day comment period. So we really are doing our best to get out there and solicit any information to ensure that this plan is a document that's utilized and helpful. The department will review all comments and seek additional review by the Industry Steering Committee before completing the plan towards the end of March. The plan that's out there for comment right now identifies 61 occupations across 5 oil and gas industry priority career clusters. Those are natural resources, architect and construction, manufacturing, the STEM, which is the science, technology, engineering, and math, and transportation, logistics, and distribution. The plan recommends an industry alliance to continue leading the implementation of the plan, developing the outreach efforts to educate students about oil and gas careers, development of curriculum at the secondary and post-secondary levels for each of the 5 priority clusters, and monitoring of major projects to determine the best timing for the major training initiatives. Mr. Chair, as you'll know from previous discussions, it's difficult to put together a plan when the project hasn't started yet. So that's one of the challenges that we face. So we watch the timeline closely, and you'll see in Juanetta's presentation that we have defined a timeline when we would start our training. And then just before I hand it over to Juanetta Ayers, who's our Division Director for Business Services, I just want to let you know that it's her birthday today, so she has got a bye for at least the hardest questions out there.
Happy birthday.
Thank you. Happy birthday. Thank you. And welcome back, Juanetta.
Thank you. Thank you, Chairman Olson and members of the House Labor and Commerce Committee. For the record, my name is Winnetta Ayers. I'm the Director for the Division of Business Services with the Department of Labor and Workforce Development. So I know that you're interested in learning more about how the state is preparing for some of our major economic opportunities that are currently under consideration in this legislative session. And as a way of addressing that, I thought I'd really try and approach it from the employer's standpoint to deal with the question of workforce availability and preparedness. Workforce development is about anticipating what employers' needs are and figuring out how to fine-tune the education and training systems to deliver that well-qualified workforce. This slide perhaps captures what a lot of employers are finding out in the marketplace right now. For many of their recruitments, they're finding that even if they have qualified candidates, that those candidates have a number of options out in the marketplace, and some of them are global in nature. So it really puts talent in the driver's seat with regard to what their work choices are going to be in the future. And this has some serious consequences for Alaska and our economy. In his book, When Boomers Bail, Mark Lottman identifies trends and global forces that are going to be impacting workforce availability and preparedness in the coming decades. And increasingly, what this means is that the availability of a qualified workforce is going to be the defining factor for economic success in the future. Now, you've probably heard the department use this metric before, that one in five jobs in Alaska requires a college degree. However, it's also true that about 60% of all the jobs in the next decade are going to require more than a high school diploma. So let's take a look at how we're doing on this count. So if you look at this chart, which is shows post-secondary education outcomes for Alaska high school graduates and GED recipients as of 2012. As you'd expect, post-secondary outcomes increase over time as they move away from their high school graduation or receiving their GED. So if we actually look at that top class, that top cohort from 2004-2005, I think this is a class of essentially 7,000 individuals, and we can call out a couple of key points by taking a look at this. First, if we look at the far right-hand column, we see that, if you look under the college graduates, we have essentially 20%, just slightly more than 20%, that are receiving a college degree by 7 years out from high school. And then if we move to that far right column, under no post-secondary education, we have 22% that have achieved no additional training or education. We can also look under the some college or still enrolled and see a substantial portion of 42% of that graduating class that have had some college or are still enrolled in college. So point two is troubling for several reasons, mostly because these individuals have a future with no training or additional education of being underemployed or highly vulnerable to be unemployed, as we've seen in the last recession. And then point three is concerning because what it really indicates is that there are many inefficiencies or opportunity costs for these individuals that are delayed into moving into full participation in the workforce, or possibly not having the technical skills that they need that are in demand in the workforce. So this is where workforce development really plays a critical role. As a society, we begin to invest in our talent pipeline through the public education system. And I know that's an issue that takes up much of your time here in the legislature. But the workforce development system is a companion and a complement to the education system. Workforce development helps direct students and job seekers, the underemployed and the unemployed, into career pathways that will lead to a living wage. So for the rest of our time this afternoon, what I'd like to do is describe how the state invests in our talent pipeline by increasing the capacity for career and technical education across the state, for adult and incumbent worker training, for industry-specific training, and then also through the youth development system. So I'm going to turn first to how we invest in career and technical education. We have two funds that are focused on this purpose, the first of which is the Technical Vocation Education Program, or TVEP. And again, this is something that the Alaska State Legislature designated specific facilities and programs to receive capacity building and operating funds through TVEP. This is a designated fund. It's a 0.15% of the employee contribution to the Unemployment Insurance Trust. For this current fiscal year, we've had six grantees that are responsible or issued through the Division of Business Partnerships. There are other grantees that receive their funds directly or through another department. Of those six grantees, we have $4.3 million in awards, and we're projecting that there'll be over 3,300 Alaskans that receive training or some level of secondary or post-secondary education as a result of these funds. You may also be aware that Governor Parnell has proposed in House Bill 278 to reauthorize the TVEP program for 10 years and also to strengthen it by including a requirement for dual credits so that it establishes stronger links between secondary education and post-secondary job training. The second fund under this category is the Career and Technical Education Program. And this is largely to fund strategies that have been identified in the state's Career and Technical Education Plan. And it focuses specifically on developing career and technical education curriculum and training capacity. Most of the grantees under this fund are school districts or nonprofit training providers. This is an annual UGF appropriation. And this year, we've had 15 grantees. Again, these were competitively awarded as opposed to the TVEP, which are designated in statute. And we've issued $610,000 in awards. And as a result, we expect to see over 1,800 students have additional career and technical education access. The second category is adult and incumbent worker training. And here we also have two funds, the first of which is the State Training and Employment Program, or STEP. And this is by far the largest training fund that we have in the state. The focus here is on increasing access to job training for employers, employees, and future workers. And the concept of the fund as it was established is to reduce the demand on unemployment benefits or other social support services. This is also a designated fund. It's a 0.1% of the employee contributions to the Unemployment Insurance Trust. For this fiscal year, we've had 37 grantees, again, competitively awarded, a total awards of $5.9 million, and we expect to see over 3,400 Alaskans increase their training as a result. I can mention some of the grants under this. For example, an employer example would be Carlisle Transportation Systems, which is providing commercial driver training, which we have tremendous demand for now, and we anticipate that demand will continue to be high and sustained as we approach some of our large projects. Alaska Works Partnership is also a grantee. They're focused on rural building maintenance and weatherization. And then also plumbers and steam fitters are using STEP funds for their apprenticeship and journeyman training. The second fund under adult and incumbent workers is the Workforce Investment Act, or WIA, Adult and Dislocated Workers Funds. These are, unlike our other funds, these are federal formula funds that are allocated to the states. And rather than being issued as grants, they're issued as individual training allowances, or ITAs. So for this fiscal year, we expect $2.9 million in training awards in ITAs, and that will impact over 3,100 Alaskan trainees. Again, the idea here is to help people achieve occupational skills so that they can make a living wage. And there are some eligibility requirements under WIA, so the people here would go to our job centers, 21 job centers across the state. They would be assessed by one of the career development specialists at the job center, and then a determination would be made as to whether or not they were eligible for an ITA. The next category is industry-specific training funds. From time to time, the legislature and some of our federal funding partners, like the U.S. Department of Labor, have asked us to administer targeted training funds. And the first of these is the Alaska Oil and Gas Occupations Training Fund. This is a UGF appropriation, and the it is was made specifically to support the 2008 Oil and Gas Workforce Development Plan. For this year, again, these are competitively awarded grants. We have 10 grantees for $424,000 in awards, and we expect to see 562 Alaskans trained as a result.
Mr. Speaker.
Mr. Chairman, if I could you go into a little bit more detail on what training is encompassed in these grants?
Specific, Representative Chenault, through the chair, specifically for oil and gas fund?
Right.
Well, this year I can give you some examples for of the grant recipients. Associated Builders and Contractors of Alaska is one of our grantees. They are instituting a distance learning program, and that covers occupations from security, electrical, plumbers, pipe fitters, and steam fitters, and sheet metal workers. We also have a grant to the University of Alaska Anchorage. They're doing an 8-week project management intensive, and that's specifically to help sanction projects and move them forward, making the economic case for an oil and gas project. And then another grantee is Tulugac, and they're doing training for aerial remote sensing, and that's to track marine mammal migration patterns offshore off the North Slope for offshore oil development. So those are just three examples, but again, we have 10 grantees, and it covers a range of different occupations, everything from basic camp services to, what I say, the project management intensive would be more engineering focused.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Also, as you heard from Commissioner Bloomer, we've been working on the Alaska Oil and Gas Workforce Development Plan, and that was put together in conjunction with an industry steering committee. We've released it for some informal public comment, and this plan prioritizes those long-term legacy jobs and identifies an action agenda to continue to advance the oil and gas industry through workforce preparedness. We also have the Denali Training Fund. This is a fund that we've administered for a number of years through federal funds that are issued to the Denali Commission. And the Commission has worked with the Department to field and administer the grants that are issued under the Denali Training Fund. These funds are largely focused on occupations that will support some of the infrastructure or healthcare facilities or energy projects that have been funded by the Denali Commission. This, we anticipate, will be the last year for the Denali Training Fund because of the reduction in federal funds to the Denali Commission. We have 6 grants this year for a total of $810,000 and expect 117 Alaskans to be trained as a result. We also have the Alaska Cast and Crew Advancement Program. This was a legislatively designated capital grant some years ago. Because of the states offering film incentives for film and television production to happen in Alaska, we realized that in order to maximize the state's economic return, there needed to be some additional workforce training. And so these are issued first on competitively awarded grants, and there were 7 of those initially awarded. We have 6 left, and then a portion of it was also set aside for individual training allowances, again through the job centers. Alaskans who were looking for training in this area could go into the job center and ask for a training allowance for this purpose.
Chairman,
Representative Millett.
Thank you. So I'm sure you're aware of the legislation that is in right now that would kill the film tax credit. Mm-hmm. So what happens if that actually passes? What will happen to all the grantees, and the money would just go back into the general fund, or would you reauthorize it for some other grant program?
Representative Millett, through the chair, I'll have to double check, but I do believe either this year or next year would be the last year for the funding based on the time that it was appropriated as capital funds. We would have an obligation with regard to the grants that we've issued to continue to work with those individuals. I think there could possibly be a rescission on the funds available for individual training allowances. But that's, I'd have to do a little bit more work on that to give you a definitive answer.
So how much of that, follow up?
Follow up.
How much of that $249 million is encumbered?
It's Representative Millett through the chair. It's $249,000. And it's about half and half. Most of it, again, we did half to the grantees and half to individual training allowances. So my suspicion is we'd probably have roughly that same amount in terms of the split now.
Okay, thank you.
And then our final industry-specific training fund is the Alaska Construction Academy. Again, this is a legislatively designated grant. We have one grantee, which is the Construction Education Foundation. The total for this fund is $3.2 million. And this basically promotes an understanding of the construction industry, construction trades, and helps students understand how to get into registered apprenticeships or other post-secondary education that will lead to a construction industry career. This is not training. It is essentially outreach and developing that pipeline of potential workers from middle and senior high school up through post-secondary education. They do have some adult trainees, but it's a small percentage of the total activity under the fund. Their projection for this year is over 4,800 students would be receive information and understand how to access construction industry careers.
Representative Ryan Bull.
Thank you. Basically, what my question is who gets this money? I've had a lot of questions about this Construction Academy, mm-hmm. and just how do you divvy up this $3 million?
Representative Reinbold, through the chair, it's not our job as a department to divvy the funds up. These are legislatively designated funds to one individual grantee, the Construction Education Foundation. So it's not competitive as with some of our other grants. It's similar to TVEP in the sense that the legislature has identified the grantee and basically told the department to administer it, and that's what our role is.
Hello. Where am I at? We have one in Kenai. We could take you on a tour as soon as we get out of here in the interim.
That'd be fun. How about during fishing season?
Actually, it's about halfway between the speaker's district
that's,
and mine.
That's not on the academy's construction schedule.
The final section I want to talk about is youth development. And one of the basic tenets of workforce development is that you have to begin when students are still in school or at risk of not completing school. And some years ago, I worked as a contractor for the Department of Health and Social Services on a statewide adolescent health plan. And one of the key takeaways from that plan was that young people engage in risky behavior when they can't envision a future for themselves. And the youth development system is about helping young people identify and envision what that future could look like. There are two funds that reach out to youth in and out of school, and I'll cover each one of them in turn, but the focus largely is on career planning, school completion, related work experience, and other activities that help youth plan and create their future. The first fund is the Alaska Youth First Fund, and again, this is focused on career awareness, employability skills or work maturity skills, paid and non-paid work experience, applied academic training, and educator externships. This is a general fund appropriation. For this year, we have 18 competitively awarded grants for a total of $1.9 million, and we expect to reach over 17,000 students, individuals, as a result. I will pause here and just give you a little bit more information about Alaska Youth First because it is slated for reduction in terms of our the budget that passed the House subcommittee. It was targeted to reduce our division budget by $2.4 million, and that's the total of this fund is $2.4 million. So these are the kinds of activities that will be reduced as a result of that. So there's a lot of activities that happen in the classroom with regard to career guide presentations, assessments for career interests, and other kinds of career fairs or sharing of labor market information. There's activities that happen out in the workplace in terms of creating job shadowing or career mentoring programs. Another activity is career service projects, where students identify a need out in the community and go out and essentially create a short-term job for themselves to help resolve that community need. And then as they mature and move into their senior high school years, they're doing more activities like taking the work keys exam, obtaining a work-ready certificate, working on other kinds of occupational certificates that will help them be job-ready when they're done with high school. And they're also working on and identifying what those other post-secondary education or training options might be, including things like apprenticeship, trade and technical schools, or military service.
Chairman Olson.
Representative Millett.
Thanks. I sat on the subcommittee for Labor and Commerce, and we did take all, actually this program will be completely gone if the budget holds true. We did have some conversation with the chair of the subcommittee about working with Department of Labor to try to find some cuts elsewhere, because this is a pretty powerful program that's been going on. It's in its third year?
Originally in 2006, so it's actually been about 9 years.
9 years. Mm-hmm. And so if the cut goes through, we won't have any type of career counseling done in any of the schools, including the Military Youth Academy, any schools. So I just wanted to make sure that the committee was aware that that whole program and that whole infrastructure that we built up, we took away in one fell swoop in the subcommittee.
Mr. Representative Joseph, I guess this is really for both of you, apparently would know this. Was this a governor's recommendation or the subcommittee's recommendation?
Through the chair, Representative Joseph, it was somebody on the subcommittee's recommendation.
Okay. All right. So if I could, Mr. Chairman?
Certainly.
What is it that the governor would like in this Alaska Youth First program? Because I'm not on the subcommittee. I've had no exposure to it.
Representative Joseph, and through the chair, this program was fully funded in the governor's budget.
And what does that constitute? What is
1.9?
The total is, through the chair, $2.4 million. There's some salaries and grant administration costs that are included in the program.
Thank you.
Our final fund under youth development is the Workforce Investment Act Youth Funds. These funds are fund activities that are very similar to Alaska Youth First, but again, there are eligibility requirements here. Alaska Youth First is focused on youth ages 14 to 24. WIA Youth is focused on a little bit narrowly on youth ages 14 to 21. And again, here there's some assessment activities that are done by our grantees. We have 10 grantees this year for a total of $1.4 million in awards, and an estimated 3,100 youth will be served as a result. Again, these are federal formula funds to the states. So that in total is our workforce development system. And I'd like to finish off by looking at some of just to say, first of all, that not all of the department's workforce development activities are mentioned here. The department does much more with regard to transitioning veterans, prisoner reentry, mature workers, people with disabilities, and vocational rehabilitation. So there's much more to our workforce development programs. But I thought I'd finish with this chart, which is included in the oil and gas workforce plan. I apologize, it's not entirely readable on the screen. Hopefully it's better in your hard copy. But what we have here is a look at some of our major projects that are forthcoming and how the Industry Steering Committee took a look at what our workforce development needs would be for oil and gas. We have a number of incredible projects for economic potential in our portfolio, including the Alaska LNG project, the in-state gas line, and the Donlin Gold project. Not included here are many, dozens of other mining projects, which also will have significant demand on our workforce, as well as public infrastructure projects. So this chart just depicts those projects and what we know about the timing of them. The focus of our oil and gas plan is really to cover through 2018. And it's really important in terms of workforce development to use the funds that we have available to time them appropriately so that the workforce is ready at the time that the employers need them. These projects are going to demand thousands of qualified workers, and many of those workers are just entering our middle and high schools right now. So building and optimizing our talent pipeline is the objective of the workforce development system, and we're going to be challenged to meet some of those demands. But we can work to ensure that Alaskans are prepared and well-qualified to take lead positions and legacy jobs that will lead to long-term careers and productive lives in Alaska. Mr. Chairman.
Well, I'd like having it all on one page, but I'm looking down the first entry, Point Thompson, and I believe that's light by several hundred employees.
Yeah, I think
I think it's closer to 450 to 600. Yeah. But that's good. I'd rather have it be on the light side than be overly optimistic. But I'm guessing some of the rest of them are probably real conservative estimates as well.
Mr. Chairman, yes, the numbers probably look a little light because they're from the project operator perspective, not necessarily inclusive of all of the contracting that might be associated with that job.
Who's got the first question? Representative Millett.
Thank you. The Pipeline Training Center in Fairbanks that you and I went through on a tour, was it last year or the year before? Is there funding that comes from the Department of Labor for the Pipeline Training Center? Or how is that funded?
Through the chair, Representative Millett. The Pipeline Training Center does actually apply for some competitive grants through the Department of Labor. So they go through the same process that any other grantee would go through. And then as far as their business model, I couldn't really speak to that particularly. I think they do some contract training and other things up there.
Follow-up? One thing I noticed when we were there, it seemed like they, if I recall, they said they had one class a year, and it seems we invested a lot of money in that Pipeline Training Center. I think it was appropriation from the legislature at one point in time. And then partial private funding. Are they doing any more than one class a year? I think they said they had one 12-week class a year. It seems a little ridiculous to keep that facility only active for 90 days.
Through the chair, Representative Millett, I believe they are working on some other training at this point. I know they're working with the university on some process tech training that they're doing over there. They've also just opened up a 16-bay welding shop over there and are starting to do the complete and all-inclusive welding training. And then I just spoke with them a couple of weeks ago, and they're actually incorporating a high school. I'm not certain that it's complete yet, so I might be speaking out of school, but they're completing some training programs that will actually allow high school credits, so they're working on the dual credit process as well. But if you would like, I can get you a full list of what they're doing now as opposed to when we went out there a year ago, I think.
Yeah. To the chair, that would be great if it could come through you.
New question? Or
that no, just the information on the Pipeline Training Center.
Representative Jones?
Well, I mean, the only thing, this has been very helpful. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Principally, I just want to know, and this has come up, and we'll have other opportunities, what the impact of the LNG construction will be and where people will be housed and how we will deal with all of that. Hopefully there will be another setting for that. I've gotten parts of it in other committees. So. Because it's my understanding there's no way that Alaska's employment base can build this alone.
We can look at the total and see that. It was the same problem we had with TAPS. We needed a lot of people at one time, and we didn't have, I believe, any training in place or minimal training at that point in time. But I'd like to compliment you on looking forward instead of sitting here wondering why we didn't have anybody ready. At least hopefully we'll have a good number of people in a position to take those jobs. Representative Reinbold, any questions? Mr. Speaker.
Hey, Mr. Chairman. Commissioner, do you guys have numbers that would show us some kind of an idea on how many of these folks have been put to work, actually working, after completing some of these programs?
I can see the birthday girl really wants to answer this. So I'm not sure.
Speaker Chenault, through the chair, we do have, through our training provider performance report, we can indicate how many people were employed within 1 year of their training, if it was in a training-related job, and what their wage outcomes were. So for STEP, any of the ones where we are tracking individual information, the programs like Alaska Youth First or TVEP, where they're more school-related, where there may be a longer-term job outcome, and we don't get individual reports, we don't have that information. But we can tell you, I can also tell you that when the 2008 plan came out, we did have a $7.5 million federal appropriation, and we've done a look at long-term what the outcomes were for those individuals. We can tell you that 3 years after all of the training funds had been expended, 80% of those individuals were working in Alaska, and they had a total of 30 million, there was 1,600 or 1,700 individuals trained with those funds, and they had $30 million in wages the quarter before their training, and then 3 years later they had $43 million in wages. So a significant increase in terms of their earnings potential, and certainly those will be people that we will hope be prepared for some of the frontline supervisory or more advanced positions in a gas line project.
How many total people did you say?
I think it was 1,646, but between 16 and 1,700.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Any further questions? Any further comments?
Mm-hmm. No, we just thank you, Mr. Chair and committee, for presenting to you today, and we will be happy to even take questions that you come up with at a later date.
Mr. Speaker.
Mr. Chairman, could I ask one probably that doesn't necessarily pertain to this, but could you talk to us about what the Department of Labor is doing with folks that are associated with Flint Hills? Just in general?
Speaker Chenault, through the chair, we have a rapid resource program response team through our job service centers, and the rapid resource folks have reached out to Flint Hills. We offer services as far as job matching. We have been working with a couple of the other industry folks who have reached out saying we're interested in hiring those people. So we have requested information. We request information on all the employees that are potentially slated for layoff, and we try to reach out individually and contact each one of those folks.
Okay. On that point, do you have any rough estimate on how many people are actually leaving the Fairbanks area because of that? Are they sticking it out? Are they? I know when we had Agrium shut down in Kenai, we were anticipating that a lot more of the people would have left town, and it wasn't the case. Is that what it is in Fairbanks at this point in time? Or,
Mr. Chair, it's my understanding that at this point, Flint Hills has not given us a clear number, a solid number on how many people they are going to keep around, and so it would. I don't have that number right now, but I can keep my ears open for that.
Yeah, thanks. And again, we were speaking only for myself, but I think the chairman or the speaker would probably agree that the team that you had in Kenai did an excellent job. And again, thank you for coming today. And with that, we will adjourn at 4:05.